In the literary world, few books have caused as much controversy and captivation as Kiss of the Basilisk by Lindsay Straub. This underground sensation has been passed from reader to reader with hushed warnings. You'll never be the same after this. The novel has gained a cult following among celebrities like Florence Pugh and Phoebe Bridgers, who have cryptically referenced it in interviews. What makes this book so compelling is its fearless exploration of power dynamics, consent, and the blurring of boundaries between monster and human. In an era where fantasy romance dominates bestseller lists, Straub's work stands apart for its unflinching examination of desire's darkest corners. As one viral TikTok review put it, "This book will ruin you for all other fantasy romances. Proceed with caution." In the village beyond the wall, 14 girls and their mothers make a solemn procession toward the caves, their footsteps echoing against ancient stone in the pre-dawn darkness. Among them is Tem, her thighs anointed with Yilang Yang and sandalwood oils for courage and allure. Traditional scents passed down through generations of women who have made this same journey. Her mother's cryptic advice echoes in her mind: be polite, defer completely to the basilisk, and prepare for a transformative experience. The weight of centuries of tradition hangs heavy in the air, mixed with the sweet smoke of ceremonial incense and the bitter scent of fear. One girl flees in terror, her screams piercing the solemn atmosphere. But Tem follows an instinctive pull toward the farthest cave, remembering her strange dream where fire didn't burn her, but rather danced across her skin like summer rain. This opening scene establishes the ritualistic nature of the village's relationship with the basilisks, mysterious serpentine creatures who take human form at will. The annual tradition sends young women to these predatory beings for what initially appears to be sexual initiation, but reveals itself as something far more complex and ancient. Each cave mouth bears intricate carvings depicting past encounters, warnings, and promises etched by those who came before. The ritual represents both a coming-of-age ceremony and a peace offering to maintain the fragile truth between humans and basilisks, a covenant written in blood and ceremony that has kept the village safe for generations. What makes this ritual particularly fascinating is how it subverts expectations. Rather than being a simple sacrifice of virgins to monsters, a trope as old as storytelling itself, it becomes a pathway to power for Tem and potentially others like her. Her instinctive choice of the farthest cave, following the same pull she felt in her dream, suggests a destiny beyond what her village imagines for her. The cave itself, marked with symbols that seem to glow with an inner light only she can see, holds secrets that have waited centuries for the right person to unlock them. This theme of transformation runs throughout the narrative. Tem transforms from obedient village girl to someone who challenges both human and basilisk authority, discovering that true power lies not in submission or dominance, but in understanding the delicate balance between the two. The ritual also establishes the book's central question: when faced with creatures who could destroy us, do we submit to tradition and fear, or do we find ways to claim our own power? The answer lies in the subtle details, the way Tem's hands don't shake as she lights her ceremonial candle, how she alone notices the patterns in the cave paintings that others have overlooked for generations, and her unique ability to sense the ancient magic that pulses beneath the surface of this centuries-old ceremony. Tem's journey begins with obedience to tradition, but will evolve into something far more revolutionary, a complete reimagining of what it means to coexist with beings both terrible and magnificent. Inside the cave, Tem meets Caspin, a basilisk in human form with golden-flecked eyes. Their initial encounters are framed as lessons, with Caspin teaching Tem about her own body before introducing her to his. "You must understand your body before understanding a man's," he explains, introducing terms like clitoris and demonstrating techniques. When Tem expresses anxiety about pleasing the prince compared to experienced girls like Vera, Caspin reassures her with his expert guidance. These intimate lessons reveal the book's unique approach to power dynamics. While Caspian initially appears to hold all authority as teacher, Tem discovers her own influence through pleasure. When she boldly challenges him to touch her instead of following his instructions, she begins testing the boundaries of their relationship. Her command for him to stand up straight so he can see her better marks her first assertion of control, showing how power can flow both ways, even in seemingly unbalanced relationships. The education extends beyond physical techniques to include the psychology of desire. Caspian creates a claw-like object from his essence that he instructs Tim to keep inside her, explaining it will connect them while apart. When it pulses, you will know I am thinking of you. This supernatural bond becomes both a source of pleasure and control, demonstrating how intimacy can create dependencies that transcend physical presence. What makes these scenes particularly compelling is how they challenge conventional narratives about sexual education. Rather than portraying Tam as a passive recipient of knowledge, the story shows her actively questioning, challenging, and eventually claiming her education as a source of power. Her growing confidence in her body and desires becomes a form of resistance against both the village's repressive attitudes and the basilisk's assumption of superiority. When Tem visits the castle to meet Prince Leo, she enters a different kind of power structure, where beauty and compliance are the primary currencies. The opulent royal residence, with its gold-adorned splendor, stands in stark contrast to her village life. In the crowded ballroom filled with royals and villagers, she observes the excessive wealth displayed and notices the social hierarchies at play. Prince Leo initially presents himself as entitled and condescending, attempting to manipulate Tam during their conversation about experience and expectations. When he tries to compliment her dress rather than her, she boldly calls him out. Implications aren't compliments. This confrontation establishes Tim as someone unwilling to play by the conventional rules of courtship, where women are expected to gratefully accept any attention from powerful men. The competition's true nature becomes clear during the elimination ceremony, where Leo ranks the remaining contestants on podiums based on their beauty. To Tem's humiliation, he places her last, a clear punishment for her earlier defiance. This public shaming reveals how beauty pageantry serves as a mechanism of control, designed to make women compete against each other for male approval. Yet Tem refuses to accept this humiliation silently. She confronts Leo in the hallway, and when he admits he wants her to stay despite his actions, she delivers a powerful response. Then act like it. This moment transforms their relationship, as Leo begins to see her as more than just another contestant to be judged. The politics of selection in the story reflect broader social dynamics, where women's worth is often measured by their appearance and compliance. By challenging these structures, Tem begins dismantling not just her own participation in them, but questioning their very foundation. Her refusal to accept beauty as her primary value forces both Leo and the reader to reconsider what truly matters in human connection. As Tam and Caspian's relationship deepens, they spend hours in intimate conversation, with Caspian revealing his full name is Caspinon Draken, a rhyming name that makes Tam laugh. This moment of genuine connection humanizes him, yet reminds us of his otherness. Their relationship evolves beyond teacher-student to something more complex and equal, though still fraught with danger. This danger becomes explicit during an intense encounter when Caspian's skin begins transforming into scales that spread across his body. He's transitioning into his true basilisk form. Despite his desperate commands for her to leave, Tem refuses to abandon him, touching his burning scales and urging him to stay with her. Against all wisdom, she opens her eyes, wanting to see his true form despite knowing it could kill her. This scene crystallizes the book's exploration of dual identities. Caspian exists between human and monster, constantly struggling to contain his predatory nature. Basilisks aren't meant to be with humans, he later explains. We are predators who take pleasure in human pain. This confession reveals the central conflict within him, between pleasing Tem and hurting her, as his true form craves the latter. Tem's own dual identity emerges later when she discovers she's half basilisk herself, explaining her unusual connection to Caspin and her immunity to certain basilisk powers. This revelation forces her to reconcile the human values she was raised with and the basilisk nature she's beginning to discover within herself. The monster within metaphor extends beyond the literal to explore how we all contain contradictory impulses, desires that may frighten us, capacities for both tenderness and violence, and the struggle to integrate these opposing aspects of ourselves. By embracing both her human and basilisk sides, Tem ultimately finds a strength neither humans nor basilisks possess alone, the ability to bridge worlds through understanding both perspectives. The fragile peace between humans and basilisks rests on a foundation of systematic exploitation and mutual distrust. When Tem discovers two stone statues in the village square, the petrified remains of boys who dared to attack her, she immediately confronts Caspin about their deaths. His cold admission, devoid of any remorse, illuminates the ruthless justice system basilisks employ. These weren't just random acts of violence. They represented an ingrained cultural response to any perceived threat against their kind, revealing how deeply the basilisk's defensive nature runs. Meanwhile, beneath the opulent castle halls, Tem uncovers an even more sinister operation. Dozens of basilisk prisoners chained in dark chambers, their blood systematically harvested to create the magical gold that underpins the kingdom's entire economy. The prisoners' scales have dulled from lack of sunlight, their bodies weakened by constant blood loss. This horrific revelation exposes the true cost of human prosperity, a system of torture masked by gleaming architecture and royal pageantry. When Tem later guides Leo through these underground chambers, his reaction moves beyond mere shock to profound moral crisis. The realization that every golden coin in his family's treasury, every piece of jewelry worn at court, represents another basilisk suffering fundamentally reshapes his understanding of his inheritance. The political landscape grows more complex when Tem attends the Basilisk Council, held in an ancient chamber carved from living stone. There, Bastion, Caspin's father and the formidable Serpent King, presents a plan that would dramatically shift the balance of power. He proposes using Tem's unique hybrid abilities to crest the royal family, a form of magical enslavement that would effectively reverse centuries of human dominance. The council chamber erupts in debate, with younger basilisks advocating immediate action while older members counsel caution. When Tem raises ethical concerns about enslaving innocent people, Bastion counters with brutal pragmatism. Either perform the cresting peacefully or watch as open warfare claims thousands of lives on both sides. These political machinations reveal how power corrupts across species lines, creating parallel systems of oppression. King Maximus maintains his realm through basilisk exploitation, while King Bastion plots to establish basilisk supremacy through equally cruel means. The centuries-long conflict between humans and basilisks, complicated by the bitter rivalry between the Dracone and Seneca basilisk quivers, demonstrates how hatred becomes self-perpetuating, with each generation inheriting and intensifying their ancestors' prejudices. Tem's unique position as both human and basilisk makes her not just a bridge between worlds, but a potential catalyst for fundamental change. Various factions vie to control her abilities, seeing her as a weapon rather than a person. Her struggle evolves beyond personal survival into a complex political challenge. How to wield influence without becoming corrupted by it? How to break cycles of violence without creating new ones? And how to forge lasting peace without sacrificing either side's essential freedoms? Her hybrid nature forces both species to confront their prejudices and question whether their traditional enmity is truly inevitable. As Tem develops feelings for both Caspin and Leo, she finds herself torn between worlds. With Caspin, she shares an intense supernatural bond. Their minds can connect, they can feel each other's pleasure, and they've even bound their lives together through blood magic. With Leo, she finds a more human connection based on mutual growth and understanding. He sees her as an equal and challenges his own privilege for her sake. This love triangle transcends the typical romantic competition. It represents Tem's fundamental choice between her basilisk and human natures. Caspin represents primal power, supernatural connection, and embracing her monstrous side. Leo represents human values, social change, and the possibility of reforming corrupt systems from within. When Leo discovers Tem's relationship with Caspin, he makes an extraordinary proposal. He'd rather have half of Tem than all of someone else. This suggestion of a permanent arrangement where he shares her challenges conventional notions of romance and possession. Similarly, when Caspin learns of Tem's feelings for Leo, he eventually accepts sharing her rather than demanding exclusivity. This unconventional resolution suggests that integration, rather than choice, might be possible, that Tem doesn't have to reject either side of herself. The men's willingness to share her represents acceptance of her dual nature in a way neither human nor basilisk society could previously imagine. The triangle also explores different forms of love. With Caspin, love is intense, primal, and consuming. My compass points to you. I could not change direction even if I wanted to. With Leo, love is a choice made daily, based on respect and shared values. By experiencing both, Tem learns that love itself contains multitudes. It can be both wild and gentle, instinctive and chosen. The basilisk ritual to legitimize Tem and Caspin's relationship exposes the raw, primal foundations of their hierarchical society. To transcend her status from mere human pet to Caspin's recognized equal, Tem must participate in an ancient ceremony before the entire quiver, a public sexual encounter with Bastion, the basilisk king. This barbaric tradition exemplifies how basilisks determine worth and status through displays of sexual dominance, physical endurance, and psychological control. The ritual's public nature serves multiple purposes. It demonstrates the candidate's worthiness, reinforces social bonds within the quiver, and establishes clear power dynamics. Despite her initial revulsion and fear, Tem approaches the challenge with calculated determination. She discovers an unexpected wellspring of calm in the face of this ordeal, drawing strength from her desire to prove herself worthy of her position. During the ritual, she demonstrates remarkable agency, employing the intimate techniques Caspin taught her while leveraging her growing understanding of basilisk psychology. When she observes Bastion's visceral response to her pain and discomfort, she recalls Caspin's crucial warning about basilisk's innate pleasure in human suffering. This knowledge becomes her weapon. She strategically manipulates Bastion's predatory instincts, turning what should be her submission into a subtle form of control. The ceremony evolves into an elaborate display of power and sexuality as Caspin and Tem consummate their bond before the assembled quiver. This act triggers a collective sexual frenzy, transforming the gathering into an orgiastic celebration where basilisks shed their human guises for their true serpentine forms. This mass transformation represents the core values of basilisk society, the seamless integration of power, pleasure, and predatory nature, all performed as a public spectacle that reinforces their cultural identity. The power dynamics undergo a seismic shift when Bastion later attempts to forcibly crest Tem, an act of dominance that crosses established boundaries. Caspin's response is swift and devastating. He attacks his father in a display of protective fury that culminates in ritual cannibalism. By consuming Bastion alive, Caspin simultaneously exacts personal vengeance and fulfills the traditional path to succession, becoming the new Serpent King through the literal consumption of the Old One's power. Throughout the narrative, ritualistic elements serve as crucial mechanisms for maintaining and transferring power. From the solemn procession of village girls to their sacrificial caves, through the castle's elimination ceremonies to the basilisk's elaborate sexual rites, each ceremony reinforces existing social hierarchies while providing structured paths for their transformation. Tem's journey is marked by her strategic subversion of these rituals. She refuses to accept Leo's arbitrary rankings, seizes control during the basilisk ceremony, and firmly rejects Bastion's unauthorized attempt to crest her. Through these acts of resistance, she not only challenges the established order, but also helps forge a new paradigm of power relations between humans and basilisks. Throughout the story, Tem's journey centers on claiming agency in a world where others constantly make decisions about her body and future. From her mother hiding her basilisk heritage to protect her, to Caspin binding their lives together without her knowledge, to Leo and Bastion both attempting to control her destiny, Tem repeatedly finds others making choices on her behalf. The turning point comes when Tem discovers that Caspin's crest has wounded her basilisk side, which is slowly dying, and because of their blood bond, Caspin is dying too. Despite this, Caspin insists she not perform the crest on the royals. In this moment, Tem realizes that sometimes love means making difficult choices against someone's wishes. There are limits to what you can allow. During the chaotic battle at her wedding to Leo, Tem finally integrates her human and basilisk sides, finding her own power rather than relying on either man. She heals herself and reopens her mental connection with Caspin, enabling him to fight. Yet when she's mortally wounded, she initially refuses to crest Leo to save herself, not wanting to take away his agency. In the aftermath, Tem makes perhaps her most powerful choice. She tells Leo to find Evelyn and choose his own future, giving him back his agency despite their permanent bond. This act of releasing someone she loves, even when she has the power to keep him, represents true strength. The epilogue shows Leo helping to free Kronos, Tem's father, from his imprisonment and confronting King Maximus. Before leaving to find Evelyn, Kronos tells Leo that Tem loves both him and Caspin, suggesting they'll find their way back to each other. This open-ended conclusion reinforces the theme that love shouldn't be about possession, but about allowing others the freedom to choose. The final image of Tem creating a golden claw from her hands and placing it around Caspin's neck represents her claiming her power on her own terms. Their bond is now one she has actively chosen and created, rather than one imposed upon her. In this moment, she has fully integrated her dual nature and found a way to love that doesn't require sacrificing her autonomy. The story concludes with significant transformations in both human and basilisk societies. Leo imprisons his father in the same cell where Kronos was kept, a poetic justice that breaks the cycle of royal abuse. Caspin becomes the new Serpent King after killing his father, potentially creating an opportunity for reform in basilisk society. These parallel power transitions suggest the possibility of change in systems that have perpetuated violence for generations. Both Leo and Caspin choose to protect Tem rather than maintain their respective kingdom's traditions, indicating that love can be a revolutionary force that disrupts entrenched power structures. The reunion between Kronos and Daphne, Tem's mother, represents healing of old wounds. When Kronos reveals he somehow sensed both Daphne and Tem over the years despite his imprisonment, it suggests connections that transcend physical separation, a theme echoed in Leo's feeling of being tethered to Tem despite distance. As Leo journeys to find Evelyn following Tem's instructions, he experiences physical pain from being pulled back toward Tem, a reminder that choices have consequences and bonds aren't easily broken. Yet he persists, honoring Tem's wish for him to pursue his own happiness. The final scenes leave us with a sense of possibility rather than certainty. We don't know if Leo and Evelyn will reconnect successfully, if Tam and Caspin will create a more just basilisk society, or if the peace between humans and basilisks will last. This ambiguity reflects real-world truth. Revolutions don't guarantee utopias, and breaking cycles of violence requires ongoing commitment rather than single heroic acts. What remains clear is that through her journey, Tam has transformed from a girl defined by others' expectations to a woman who defines herself. Her legacy isn't just in the political changes she helped catalyze, but in demonstrating that even within systems of oppression, individuals can make choices that affirm their humanity and create possibilities for those who come after them.